When the hammer of suffering keeps falling, it can feel like you are stuck between a rock and a hard place. But what if the rock is actually a means of provision? What if that hard place is actually holy?
Welcome to the Rock in a Holy Place podcast, where we explore what it means to see suffering as a place where God is not only present, but active, and how he was able to use suffering for our greatest good and for his ultimate glory.
I'm Sheila Adkins.
And I'm Grace Kelly. We've seen God in our own difficult seasons of life, and we want to share the hope that we've found with you.
We're so glad you're joining us today. Welcome to Rock in a Holy Place, listeners. Today, we have another special interview episode. Grace's brother, Jesse, came on the podcast to talk about walking through a season of anxiety and depression and how music was a path to healing for him. Jesse shares some really cool perspective shifts that he had in his relationship with God during this season of suffering, and Grace and I are confident that this episode will bless you. Make sure to check out the show notes for this episode so you know where to find Jesse's music that's available for listening. And now, here's our interview with Jesse Morton.
Welcome, Jesse. We're so happy to have you here on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
So, listeners, Jesse is actually my littlest brother. Mm-hmm. And so we're super excited to have him here today. He is also an incredible rapper, which we will get to hear a little bit more about that at the end.
Yeah.
So for sure, check him out. It's Jesse Gray. He's Jesse Gray.
Jesse Gray.
Yeah, we'll have show notes for you so you can listen to some of his music, which we'll talk about a little bit more at the end. But Jesse, tell us about your darkest season of your life.
It was when I went to college. I was only there for less than one semester, so that didn't last super long. But yeah, it was in the fall of 2017. I went to CSU. I had been struggling with depression in high school, but when I was in college, everything got much worse. So I like to say that it was basically a perfect storm of bad things. I was no longer living with my parents, so there was a big disconnect from my support system I had been taking for granted for most of my life. So I needed friends for emotional support. So I was really avid on keeping my friends that I had and trying to make new friends, and both of those were not going super well in college. So yeah, so I lost a lot of my friends that I had carried that were from the same high school I was at and then moved over to college with. A lot of those ones I just fell out of friendship with for various reasons. And some of the new friends I had started making weren't the best of friends. Some would be very, I don't know how to put it, but very rude to me. And that, along with losing some of my old friends, was a really hard time. But that was only the beginning. It just got worse and worse with various other life circumstances. I had started hanging around with people who smoked a lot of weed. So I got into that as a way of coping my intense negative emotions I was feeling at the time. And then the kind of icing on the cake, so to speak, was that I had reached out to a friend that I hadn't seen for some time and felt like was avoiding me. And I met up with them for, I think it was a dinner in one of the dorm, like, dinner halls, and basically blamed them for everything that was going wrong and basically pouring out all my anger and harsh emotions onto this person, which was the second to last conversation I ever had with this person. And that completely ended our friendship. I tried going into therapy because there was some therapy resources there at the campus, but I wasn't super jiving with the first therapist person. I only went to like one or two sessions. And then I tried to get a switch, and then for some reason, I don't know, I still don't know what happened to this day, but you're supposed to be able to switch stuff on some website, but it didn't work. And then I showed up ready for a new person, and it was the same person.
No,
and I was like, I was very anxious at the time, as on top of being depressed. So I was like, if they somehow find out that I switched them, like, that would be so awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And I never went back because of that. So at that point, I was suicidal. I remember I would constantly take walks. I even remember a specific time where I couldn't sleep at night, and I was taking a walk barefoot around the campus because for some reason the concrete felt so nice on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
At 2 a.m. in the morning. And that was like a normal thing. Like, I just was always walking around. My legs were constantly sore from how much I walked. And I was, at that point, I really wasn't going to classes or anything. So I just dropped out. That was near the end of the semester. So that was the darkest season, I'd say.
That's so hard. Thank you for sharing about that so vulnerably. So we know that pain isolates. How true did that feel for you during this dark season? I mean, obviously you had some connections, but it was kind of partier connections. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't like very authentic friendship, you know, they didn't know what was going on with you or how you were feeling.
Yeah.
So yeah. Can you tell us how that pain isolated you during that time?
Yeah. So it's common in people who are depressed by themselves to isolate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting because there were people that left that I wanted to be with. And then I turned to other people who weren't the best for me. And then I ended up isolating myself from people who really did care about me, like my sister Ruth. She was also going to CSU at the time and would try to hang out with me, get some lunch or whatever it may be. And I often dodged that because I was very ashamed of my position I was in. And I didn't want anyone in my family to know what was going on at the time, which is crazy now because I'm obviously sharing it with a family member on a podcast for a bunch of random people to hear. But, you know, things change. Praise God, things change. But at the time, yeah, I was very closed off and I felt like no one really understood me, which is part of why music was super beneficial for me. Listening to artists that I felt I could relate to was some of the only company I had at the time that I felt was honest company.
Yeah. And we mentioned earlier that you're a rapper, and that's one of the things I love about rap music, as I've come to love it in the last few years, is just how honest it is about the brokenness of things. Like, I mean, obviously there's rap music that's not honest about the brokenness of things, but
there's a little bit.
I love the music I love is that music. That's so honest about the brokenness of things. And, yeah, that's really cool. So tell us, what was the process for beginning to come out of that season of darkness? Then you mentioned music. How did expressing yourself through music become like that pathway?
Yeah.
For you.
So after I dropped out, it was a very long process. It took over a year to kind of get to not like a completely healthy state, but not so bad. But yeah, music was a big part of that. As we were mentioning before, I had started writing music again while I was in college. I had been writing since I was 14. And I mean, I was an emotional kid. I'm a very sensitive guy. So it helped me process those emotions when I was younger, but even to a larger extent in those college days. And afterward, it helped me kind of process what exactly happened. I mean, I knew people who were suicidal before I was suicidal, and I couldn't understand it until I was in that place. And then I was like, wow, like, it's crazy how much someone's mind can get twisted. But anyway, the point I'm getting to is that me writing those songs, I started seeing how God was moving through these situations in my life. I remember one of the things I would have thoughts about ending my life in various ways. And one of the things that kept me going and that would I would always come back to is like, no, you can't do that yet because you're making music right now that would help somebody who's in your situation. And you, if that would cause someone to end their life because they couldn't hear your music, then that's your fault. And that's not like the most beautiful way to hold on, but I felt responsible for other people who are in my position that I might be able to help with my gifts, and I just can't end it because I need to finish it. And that kept me going for that period of time in my recuperation stage where I was really had no other reason I had felt at the time to live. So that was the reason. And the more and more I worked on it, the more I realized it was healing me the same way I would want it to heal someone else. And I was like, this is God. This has got to be God. Like there's just no way. So.
Wow. That's really incredible. Yeah. And like you said, like, you know, I mean, obviously it wouldn't have actually been your fault if someone else harmed themselves because you hadn't made the song, but it was like a thread to hold on by. The art was a thread to hold on by. And yeah, like you said, it's like, it's kind of like cyclical almost of like the art was the thread that you were holding on to. It was like you were holding on to yourself and you didn't know it almost.
Yeah.
Like, let me keep making this art that will help you hold on, you know, and you yourself are the one needing the art at that time too.
Yeah.
Like, not that other people won't benefit from it and haven't already benefited from it too, but that's kind of how I feel about poetry sometimes too. So how did all of this impact your relationship with God, and how would you say it formed you spiritually?
I had a realization after these kind of experiences continued to happen where I was feeling the impact of what I wanted to give other people. And I had realized that through some of my writings, my innermost feelings were that I was blaming God for the negative circumstances that were happening in my life at the time. And because of that, I was very angry at him and I didn't want to face that feeling. So I distracted myself a lot with various vices and stuff. But looking back, this is one of the signs that God was with me at the time. And I didn't realize it, which is, oh man, it just makes me kick myself when I'm like, why didn't you see this whenever it happened? But one of my Christian acquaintances during my time in college had given me a bottom slip of a notebook paper. And it had a Bible verse that was on the bottom. It was one of those like Christian notebooks where it has like verses printed at the bottom of the page.
Okay, yeah.
So it was like that. And it was John 10:10, which I hadn't really paid attention to, but I kept that. I actually still have that slip of paper in my memory box. But that verse is talking about how the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But then Jesus, you know, has life to live to the full or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact quote.
God came to give us life and life in abundance.
Yes.
Something to that effect.
Yes. Yeah. And I realized that it wasn't God that was doing all these negative things to me. It was the devil. And all this anger I had towards my creator and savior should have been directed to something else. And I had to reconcile with God over me treating him unfairly with that assumption that it was all him and that he must not like me or something. After I reconciled with God, that's when my true relationship with God started. Because before, you know, I'd gone to church ever since I was a kid, heard worship music ever since I was a kid, and I never had a relationship. I believed in God, but I never had a relationship. And this is a complex thing that can be hard to understand for some people. So I'm going to share a metaphor I came up with, if you'll let me.
Yes, please do.
That helps me explain exactly what I mean. Because people, especially people who don't have a relationship with God, it's hard to understand what a relationship with God is besides just going to church or even reading the Bible. I call it the metaphor, the invisible chair. And basically the idea is, let's say you're in a room and there is a chair in the room that is invisible to you. You can be told that there's an invisible chair right there. And you can be like, okay, cool, I believe you. But just believing that there is an invisible chair, the chair doesn't affect your life in any way. You just believe that it's there. That's where I was most of my life. But whenever I had to reconcile with God and I began to rely on him to help me heal instead of continuing to distract myself from my feelings, it was like sitting in the invisible chair. It was like, okay, there is a leap of faith moment where you're not sure if your weight will be supported by what you can't see, but you have to take that leap of faith in order to feel that supported feeling. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can just imagine what it might feel like, but unless you ever, you know, if you never take the leap, you'll never get there. So now I was in a position where I was able to rely on it and push my weight onto it. And I felt like, okay, hold on, like this is real and I can interact with it. Mm. And that was the difference for me. Ever since then, I mean, I have a purpose to my prayer. I mean, I used to pray every night, you know, that's what my mom, you know, our mom taught us to do, you know, pray every night before bed. Mm-hmm. But I would just pray the same prayer. I was like talking to air. But now when I'm praying, I'm talking to God and I am sharing my real emotions with him and I am hearing things back. Like he shows up in all sorts of ways and he helps me so much in my life right now. I wish I had this relationship with him when I was in that state.
Right. Yeah.
But I needed that time of trials to get to this place now.
Right.
So that's that.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about not understanding other people who were struggling with mental health mm-hmm. issues. So would you say your experience with depression and anxiety impacted how you relate to others walking that road?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's some things you just can't understand right until you experience them. I mean, even if you have a lot of people you're close with that have certain experiences, it is impossible to know what it truly feels like and the depth of emotion that people have unless you experience it. So I learned a lot of insight when it comes to people like that, people doing irrational things and pushing away family members or people that they love. And it feels unfair to those people. Like those are it's very complex. And, you know, everyone's different too when it comes to mental health of varieties, you know? So it's not like if one person went through depression, they know exactly what another person
right,
with depression is going through. But there's definitely threads of similarity. Mm-hmm. If you know those, you can help people who are hurt by these people sometimes with their various actions. Because I know I hurt a lot of people when I was in that place. Mm. It can help those people who are on the outside understand a little bit with your insight. And like I said, it's very complex, though.
So. Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that's why it's so important to have humility about other people's suffering. Mm-hmm. Sheila and I talked about that in our episode of things not to say. Well, I don't remember what our actual title of the episode was, but we talked a lot about things not to say to people that are suffering. And yeah, I think that humility is so key to that. But mm-hmm. That's really sweet that you've gained that perspective. Okay. So what's something you would want to say to someone who is struggling right now?
I would say... I'll say this. So it's easy to discredit advice because a lot of advice people with mental health get, especially these days, because it's like almost sensational sometimes having mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of advice people get is cliche. Hearing phrases like it's going to be okay or it'll all work out really didn't help me personally. But I do want to say this to other people who may be struggling that are listening to this right now. Seasons of trial do actually, in fact, have an end. And often they're followed by seasons of growth. If you rely on God in your hard time, instead of running from him like I did, you will be blessed and you will deepen your relationship with God. And you will see the whole point of everything you went through, even if it was 50 years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to make it through. And I know that's sometimes cliche, that's corny. You heard that a lot, but there's truth to it. And sometimes you don't want to admit that, and sometimes you can't even see it. But I promise you, you just have to hold on for a little bit, and you will see the reason for all of this. God redeems everything.
Mm, yeah, he so does. Thank you for saying that. Mm-hmm. So our last question is, you mentioned the big role that music played in your healing. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your music and what you're working on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So the album I was writing in college, it was called Limbo. Not after the game with a stick. Limbo as in the, I think it's the first circle of hell. So it's a
little darker.
It's a bit more edgy than the stick one. Yeah. But yeah, just the feeling of lostness, of lack of direction, aimless wandering. That is the thing I wanted to capture, not demons poking you in the butt with a pointy stick. So
that's good. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah, just for clarification. So that was the previous work I had done. Through that work, I kind of display my whole journey through, from before I joined college, and I'm in a somewhat rough spot, but I'm all right. And you kind of see my downgrade as time goes throughout the record. And then I start realizing some key things, which I talked about here in this podcast, and you can see a change in the album's direction until the outro is a song where I have a dialogue with God, which is whenever I reconciled with him, which I had talked about earlier. So yeah, That's what that song's about.
And you can listen to that on Spotify.
Yep, Spotify, Apple Music. Jesse Gray. Everywhere.
Jesse Gray, everywhere, yeah.
Just tell Alexa.
Just tell Alexa.
Play Jesse
Gray. Play that Jesse Gray. It'll probably be some other Jesse Gray.
No, it's not. I tried it.
Oh, nice. Hey,
That's good. Good job. Google or Alexa.
But yeah, so cool. The record I'm working on right now, I'm working on quite a few records at the moment, an EP, a mixtape, 3 different albums.
He's not busy at all. It's fine. Yeah.
Not busy. But the next one I want to release, that's a concept album specifically, is focused more on the importance of choice and battling your vices. Wow. Yeah, it's definitely a different flavor. A bit more upbeat, but still has very emotional, you know, nature to it, but it's a bit more upbeat than Limbo is as a record. But yeah, I think it will be another uplifting but very authentic and honest introspective work that I hope will also have the similar effect that Limbo did, just with people with a slightly different focus issue, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that's what I'm doing.
That's awesome. We love your music. I love your music. I mean, it is super honest and good and fun and just really enjoyable to listen to. So you should definitely check out Jesse Gray, and we'll put links to that in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse, so much for being here on the podcast today. Of course. Really appreciate it. Love you so much.
Love you too.
I don't get to say I love you to all of the, you know, the guests we will have, but I get to say it to you because you're my brother. Yes. So love you, and thanks
love
for being
too,
here.
Sis. Yeah, of course.
All right. Bye, listeners.
That's our episode for today. If you found this episode encouraging, please share, review, and subscribe to the Rock in a Holy Place podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on social media. We are at The Rock in a Holy Place on Instagram and at A Holy Place Pod on Twitter. And be sure to check out Grace's blog at gracekelly.blog. That's GRACEKELLEY.blog. And now, a benediction.
For those that are wrestling beneath the overwhelming weight of anxiety and depression, may you know that you are not alone. May you see the God who has been there in the room with you all along. May you take the leap into the arms of grace and know with all your broken heart that they are strong enough to carry you.